It's like I need a cigar box to get up to this, stand up on an apple box or something.
He's big.
I'm Pete O'Brien. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 1, 1983. My home group is the Sunrise Group in Harbor City, California. And my sponsor's name is Alec. So you see, I got three very, very important elements of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't have them, I would encourage you to stick around and get them. You know, if you don't have a sobriety date, you really don't have anything. But before I get going here just a little bit, you know, we always ask for the guys in the first 30 days to stand up and all this kind of stuff. And I'd like to ask the guys in the last 30 days to stand up. You're the ones I'm looking for. Okay. Yeah. But seriously, I'd like to see a show of hands of those in the first year. Good, good. You're the ones I'm going to address my attention to, because the others know it all already anyway. So it's done. I'm supposed to explain to you, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Well, we don't have enough time to go through what it's like now. So I'm going to make it very brief on what it was like, but I wanted to express a little bit more about what happened, because I don't hear too much about that from the podiums. And I want to talk a little bit about what it was like for me and what happened. I'm not here under false pretenses. I'm not a social climber. I'm a real alcoholic, the kind they talk about in the big book Alcoholics Anonymous. My first drinking started when I was just a little kid. I was like about 5 years old. Now it was a family picnic. And this Italian was there. And he was passed out over on the picnic table. And he was full of flies. They sent me over to chase the flies off. And I got into his Dago Red. And I remember I got home that night, and God was detoxing me. And I remember that look of horror on my mother's face. Her little boy was drunk. She had enough drunks in her life, you know. And I loved her, and she loved me. And I didn't ever want to see that, but I was to see that look of horror many, many, many times. Then I got to be a little altar boy. There might not be any altar boys here, but I got to be a little altar boy. And I found out how to get that church wine out, you know. And it was important for me to be important. I'd come out with a couple of bottles of wine, and I was important, you know. All the guys in the neighborhood loved me, you know. And I remember when that priest caught me stealing his wine. I didn't want to be doing those things, you know. And I loved him, and he loved me. And you know, I'm doing these things. I'm going somewhere with this. Just stay with it. Okay. I remember shortly after I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I couldn't understand what was going on in these rooms. And I didn't know how to express it. But I could feel something. Every time I could feel those old-timers walk in the room. And I felt at ease. And I remember shooting my mouth off one time in front of my sponsor, like all newcomers do. I'm sitting in the meeting, shooting my mouth off. I can just feel the love in these rooms. I can just feel the love in these rooms. I can feel it when these old boys walk out and walk in and so on. And he kind of waited for me, and we come out that door, and he says, "That's not love you feel in there. Your mother loved you, your dad loved you, your wife loved you. All kinds of people loved you. Didn't keep you sober. What you're feeling is a spirit of the fellowship, vastly more than love. And if you're new or relatively new, I pray to God that you can feel it here tonight, because it is here. The spirit of the fellowship, vastly more than love." But anyway, a little bit more about my story here. I don't want you to think that was the end of my whole story. I had a lot of time to fill here, so. By the time I was 15, I was a daily heavy drunk. Working like a man, drinking like a man, chasing girls like a man. Because that's what men did. And when I was a kid, and they'd pat me on the head and say, "When you grow up, and when you get to be a man." And that third drink or fifth drink, whatever that magic number was that particular day, booze made me feel like a man. Man, I could hit on the girls better. I could shoot pool better. I could do anything. I was invincible at that level. That felt so good. Of course, I'd drink right on through it. But I was invincible, you know. I could do anything. I thought I could drive better. sheriff didn't agree with that one, but that created a few little problems there with this, you know. But those old boys in Alcoholics Anonymous in those days were 12-stepping me, and they told me a lot about this program. They told me about that thing that sets me apart from my fellow man, that little physical allergy, that little thing inside. My chemical plant works different than those other folks out there, and it reacts different, you know. And they also told me about that mental obsession, that thing that I would keep chasing that fun over and over and over and never find it again, you know. And I kept chasing it, you know. And I said, well, thanks, gentlemen. Thanks for all this good information. I'll figure it out. Thanks for the information, you know. Well, my figure outer didn't work very well. And if you're in this room tonight and you're still trying to figure it out, the most important thing I can tell you is you do not have to figure it out. It's already been figured out for you. It's written down. It's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit more later on after I get sober in this story here. But, you know, I had such a good figure outer. By the time I was 17, I was on the streets of Chicago. Not a very pleasant place. Not a cold, miserable, damn, tough. And all the crap was on the streets then. They didn't have the fancy designer drugs. They shot straight heroin. But, you know, they were the real alcoholics. And they had guns just as big and knives just as big, chains just as big, and all the other stuff. And wandered around on those streets. And then I come up with this great idea. If I just find the right woman, I'll be all right. Well, let me tell you, if you're in this room tonight trying to find the right woman, that don't work either. Didn't work for me. I found the right woman. I went back to Minneapolis and I got that great woman, you know, an incredible lady. And I could stop drinking for long periods of time when I was younger. You know, good reasons, you know. And I stopped drinking for a while. And within a year, I don't know if there's any Al-Anons in the room here tonight, but this is pre-Al-Anon, okay? Within a year, I drove that poor woman crazy. Absolutely crazy. This is pre-Al-Anon. That gal had it all figured out that she was going to ride by on the streetcar and bomb the bar. That was going to stop my drinking. That's how crazy we drive them. Yeah. But I could stop for periods of time. So if you're sitting in the room here tonight with 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, that's wonderful. I could do it too, for good reason. I was a periodic. And if you're a periodic like me, just sitting in these rooms won't do it. Swear to God. And I'll tell you the formula in just a little bit. But I got to get sober first, okay? So I went through these cycles. Things that get good, things that get bad. Things that get good, get a new job, straighten up. You know? Babies come along, straighten up. I was always going on a wagon. You know, I got scars on my knees. So if you're on a wagon, I can tell you that don't work. I got scars on my knees from being on a wagon. You know, and swearing off and pledges and all that other kind of stuff. Nothing worked for me in any of those areas. And I thought, well, maybe I just need to get physical a little bit more, you know. So I started doing all those different little exercises and all those things and riding my bike and doing all that other kind of stuff, you know. End up drunk. Time after time. I get on my bike, for instance, and I ride up to the marina, you know, and I get drunk and lose my bike, you know. It was just all of those kind of things. Then, of course, I got that drinking man's diet. I was always into looking good. I'm not so into looking good right now. But anyway, I was always into looking good, you know. So I go on those diets, you know. And my favorite diet was tequila and limes. If you're trying to take the weight off, I'll guarantee you it'll take the weight off. It damn near killed me trying to take the weight off. Okay? So I did all those funny things, all those different things, knowing that I was an alcoholic. And then, of course, I'm an uneducated man. You don't get much of an education when you're on the streets at that age. So I'd read all those self-help books. Every kind of cockamamie thing that I could find, I'd read it thinking, maybe I'll find out what's wrong with me. You know, your erroneous zones. Isn't that a good one? You know, read all that kind of crap and end up drunk time after time after time. So if you're still doing that kind of stuff, I'd encourage you, don't do it as long as I did. Come and join us. Just come and join us. It's important for me to tell you about my last running drunk. But leading up to that, I had come up with this grand plan for living. I was going to quit smoking at 40, quit drinking at 50, and quit chasing girls at 60. There's some of you in the room old enough to understand that is the right order. No question about that. Yeah. I got up to 40. I set those cigarettes down. I proved to them, by God, Pete O'Brien's got willpower. And they bought the lie, and so did I. And the heat was off. I bought 10 more years of drinking by quitting smoking. Okay? So we get up to 50, and the family decided to have a party. If O'Brien's going to quit drinking, it was cause for the family to have a party. And we went over to Ireland, and we went to the family castle and did all that kind of lovely stuff, you know. And, in fact, Margaret and I were just over there for our 54th anniversary just very recently. We went back to that same castle. And we had a lovely party. And I come out of that room, I come out of that hotel, and I got to Shannon Airport, and I mustered up every fiber in me. Every goddamn fiber in me screaming out, I'm not going to drink. Well, couldn't stop drinking. Did everything within me. Knowing that I was an alcoholic, making those promises, bad enough I made the promises to them, but I made the promise to me, and I couldn't keep it. So if you're a slipper, I know exactly how you feel. Been there lots and lots of times. Before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew about slipping, all that kind of stuff, whatever terminology you want to put on it, you know. And then, about that time, Margaret went to Al-Anon, realizing that wasn't going to work. And I slipped into that horrible black pit of hell that so many of us have to go, wandering around, hopeless and helpless and full of rage and full of fear and all of that stuff, you know. It just kept getting blacker and blacker. And I did that for about 5 years. I didn't get here till I was 55 years old. On my last run of drunk, it's important for me to tell you about my last run of drunk. It's as if you can't remember you're drunk, you might not have had it yet. And I don't ever want to forget. And I'm so grateful, Bob, that you invited me here tonight, because I don't ever want to forget how bad it got. And it got bad. It really got bad. You know. But on my last run of drunk, I was out there for a little over 30 days. I was great at taking those safaris. Man, I could run around with a corporate credit card and go anywhere in the world. I've been drunk in every language. You know, I had to go do all that kind of stuff. Just running around. I mean, that's what I did. You know. But on this last run of drunk, I remember I was down around Cathedral City. I went into a rage. I only knew two ways to come to. Anger. Rage roaring through me. I'd hear the birds chirping. I knew they were shitting on my car. I had a very bad attitude. Yes, you know. Yeah, bad attitude. You know, that rage just, they're doing, you know. Or fear. Where am I? Where's my wallet? Who's with me? Where's the car? What's going on here? You know that? Yeah. And that's the way I'd come to either of those things. I know what to do under both conditions. I drink. So I came to in this rage in Cathedral City and went into a liquor store. And that's about all I can remember of being in that area. And then I was down the river. Nothing different about this running drunk than many of the running drunks that I've been on. I got a place down to Parker on the river there. Many of you have been to retreats down there and so on, you know. Many, many times I've been down there, you know, and the neighbors would call a few days later and say, oh, you're home, you know, should we put the boat on the trailer, you know, should we lock up the shed? I'd be there and wouldn't know I was there, and I'd leave and didn't know I left, you know, and that's kind of the way it was, just a crazy running drunk. And I remember I was driving up to Lake Havasu, somebody cut me off on my road. That was my road, you know. I got into that rage, and I went into a bar. And that's all I can remember of over a month, you know. I can't remember anything else. And I was home. Everything is gone by now. Long-term marriage, big, beautiful family, good career. Everything is gone. And I'm sitting there in a sand chair using one of those formulas they gave me when I was a kid. Just tough it out. You'll be all right. Just sweat it out. Be a man. Well, I toughed it out so much I've got skin cancers, you know, from sweating it out and toughing it out, you know. And all of a sudden, my head cleared up. Clearer than it had been in a long, long time. And I saw my whole life go by. And I'm looking at this God-awful mess that I made. You know? Just awful mess. And by then, I need to back up just a little bit. This great lady had already gone to AA. And this is how wonderful it was at the house. And I'm not here to tell her story, but this tells you how wonderful it was at the home. It was a house. It wasn't a home. It was a battleground, you know. Her last night of drinking, she's trying to make a deal with the Mexican mafia for a contract on me with my money. She got drunk before she could do the deal. And she went, her Al-Anon sponsor sent her to AA. So I vaguely knew that she was going to AA, and I begged her to take me to a meeting. I don't remember all the events that was going on that day. I know that my head cleared up and I saw this God-awful mess, that moment of clarity. And then it started to close back down on me again a little bit. And I begged her to take me to a meeting. I begged her, and she took me. She didn't want nothing to do with me. Absolutely nothing to do with me. She wanted me dirt dead. She didn't want anything to do with me. But she thought, that poor drunk. I know there's some good men over there that'll help her. Help them. So she took me to a meeting. And she was just going to drop me off. You know. Didn't go through a spin dry. Just sat there and shook and hung on and tried to grasp what was going on. You know, Star Wars buzzing around in there. You know, if your head's buzzing, that's okay. Don't worry about it. It'll go away if you don't drink. If you drink, it'll stay with you, and it'll get worse. Then you get spiders, and then you get all DTs and all the other things that go with it. Had all of that stuff. I guarantee you, you don't have to go that far. I've been there for you. Just do what we do, please. So I sat there and shook and hung on, but they gave me two things coming through the door. They gave me hope. I knew when I was in an AA meeting I wouldn't have to drink. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not Jobs Anonymous or Cars Anonymous or Wives Anonymous, any of that other kind of stuff. This is about Alcoholics Anonymous. The very name of it tells you what it's about. And I knew when I was in a meeting I wouldn't have to drink. I went to a lot of meetings. I still go to a lot of meetings. The other thing they gave me is they gave me the Serenity Prayer. I had to write it down. And for the first time in my life, I had a prayer that worked. I want to talk a little bit about prayer. You know, I've been around the beads in front of the statues and lunch with the cardinals and all the things you can think about. But I never, ever had a connection. They were just words. Man, I could go around those beads, zippity-zip, you know. I could really say them. But you gave me a prayer that bought me something, just a little bit of time. And then it bought me a little more, and then a little more, and pretty soon it bought me more. If you're struggling, use the perfect AA prayer, the Serenity Prayer. It works. It'll buy you a few seconds. Most of my life, people said, you got to stop drinking. But nobody ever told me how. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, nobody told me I had to stop drinking. They just very gently took me by the hand, and they showed me how they didn't drink. You want to stop drinking, you come take our hand and do what we do. You hear it read in all the meetings. You want what we've got? Do what we do. You know, I hear it read all the time. Do what we do. Kind of simple stuff. That's beautiful. It's beautiful. So little by little, I started to hear things, you know. And I heard, you know, in the first maybe week or so, I heard about three pertinent ideas. I didn't know what that meant, but pertinent meant pretty damn important to me. So I started listening up. And they said, hey, they were alcoholics and could not manage their own life. No question about that one. I hope I've explained that to you because I understood it. B, that probably no human power can relieve your alcoholism. That meant Pete O'Brien. That meant the wife, the judge, the doctor, the preacher, psychologist, psychiatrist. No human power can relieve your alcoholism. C, God could and would if sought. That's the deal. And you see, it already gave me something that worked. He gave me the Serenity Prayer, and it bought me just a little bit. Then a little later on, I started to learn some more prayers, and I learned prayers that worked. I didn't know how to do the steps, didn't know how to do any of those things at first. I had to get an interpreter. They call them sponsors around here. I didn't understand the words they were using in the book. They talk about serenity. I'm a contractor. I guarantee you that's not in bid documents or proposals or trade magazines or anything else that I was around. Did not know what the word meant. Now I'm here to tell you, got a lot of it. And I heard you talk about peace. Now isn't that a totally unattainable goal? Haven't they been fighting wars forever in the name of peace? That's the kind of attitude they have. I'm here to tell you, I got a lot of peace from those early members that I was around. From the early members, some of them are here today. Yeah. Got a lot of peace deep down inside. So you see, I had to get new meanings. You talk about relationships. All I thought that meant was between the sheets. I didn't know that it had any other meaning. So I had to get all kinds of new words and new understandings and so on. And that's what my sponsor did with me. He kind of took me through the book. He said, you know, he got the book out and said, I want you to study the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, this is the basic text. So it says on the cover, it's the basic text. He says, you know what a textbook is? And I said, yeah. He said, this is a course you better not fail. You know? Think about that. So after a little while, I learned how to shoot my mouth off in all these meetings and running around, shooting my mouth off. And he told me to read the book. I read the book. I read the book at least 10 times. Coming out of a meeting one day, he pulled that book out from underneath my arm. He says, hell, you don't know how to read. I want to just kill him. You know, if you don't want to kill your sponsor once in a while, you got the wrong one. He's not telling you the truth. Yeah. He told me the truth. You know, he said, we've been getting smart asses like you lately. He said, so he had to put instructions on how to read the book. It's started in the third edition. He says, I'll show you how you read. He looked down the front, he looked down the back fly just a little bit, and he says, you look for the conclusions. You got that baby knocked. I said, yep, I've always looked for the conclusions. He says, the instructions are in the preface. You didn't read the preface, did you? I said, no, I never read a preface in my life. And he turned to the preface, and this is what he read me. And it's in your book, too, if you're still struggling with the book. Okay? That's the close of the preface. It says, if you have a drinking problem, and I hope I explained that I have one, and that's why I'm here. Yeah. We hope that you may pause and read one of the 44 personal stories and say, yes, that happened to me. More important, yes, I felt like that. And most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. He says, I want you to highlight those things. I read Bill's story at least 10 times. Every time I read Bill's story, I said, God, that guy had it tough. When I started looking for those yeses, I was just like Bill. A periodic, delusions of grandeur, all the things just like Bill. You know, had good times, bad times, all this other kind of stuff. But as soon as I turned over, he said, I want you to stay in the first 60 pages and the doctor's opinion and the forewords. I don't want you to go past the first 60 pages. He says, I want you to stay out of the back of the book. You go to too many speaker meetings now. That's just other people's story. He says, you got to find your own. So he gave me right up in the front end of the book at that time. Don't go past the ABCs. So I'm studying. But as soon as I turned it open, it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Doesn't say they're in recovery. It says they recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I hope to express to you that I have a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Okay? And then it goes on to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. But most of all about that is the fact that this was written by 100 men and women. I've never seen a book before or since that was written by 100 people. Never. So all of a sudden, this book was different for me than any other book I'd ever read. I read a lot of books trying to get up to speed in the world and couldn't find it, you know. Totally different than anything I've read. This is Pete O'Brien's opinion. I was supposed to share my experience, but this is Pete O'Brien's opinion, having been around here for a while. I believe God sat up there one day and said, listen, you dumb drunks, I've given you everything. I gave you Moses and the commandments, and you wouldn't follow any direction. I gave you Noah and the ark, and he went out and got drunk on me. I sent my son down. The first thing he did was change water to wine. I don't think that helped you. I gave you that Made in USA religion over there in Salt Lake, and that didn't help you. So I'm going to give you 164 pages. If you don't get it, then you got to die. That's exactly what this book says. It says you're doomed if you don't do this. And you got to die. I wanted to live. Once I quit shaking, Margaret was talking to me again. You know, all kinds of things were starting to take place here by not drinking, you know. Now, the reason why I say that, why I think this is God's covenant with me and you and with Alcoholics Anonymous, is for thousands of years, guys just like me have been out there dying in the drainage ditches, run over by the chairs, thrown in the dungeons, heads cut open, banged on the knees, shocked, dunked, prayed over. Nothing, but nothing ever worked. Every government has tried it. Ever since they've been stomping grapes. You know, the Greeks tried to fix us. The Romans tried. The French, the Irish, the Americans, you name it. There's over 200 programs up in Canada right now using taxpayer money trying to figure this thing out. $5, we got an answer. You know? Think about that. No government has ever figured it out. No medical society has ever figured it out. The book is very clear. And see, God couldn't, would have thought. So, what do we have here? What do we really have here? I think you'll find it on page 28. I give you page numbers because that's what they did with me. I was studying the book and those old boys, Singing Sam and the rest of those guys, get up there and talk about page numbers. I'd say, oh, they're not on that page, and I'd run home. I'd jump in the book. And they were always right, but I don't know. This is what it says on page 28. It says, what seemed at first a flimsy reed, R-E-E-D, the paper, what seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. If you're in the big book, you're in the hands of God. And I don't mess with any guys that aren't in the big book. They can go elsewhere. They can go wherever the hell they want. But they aren't going to work with me. Because this is God's deal. And that's why I'm here. Try and help them find their way through it just like they did with me. Then it goes on. It says, a new life has been given us. Welcome, new friends. You're already here. It's already been given to you. What are you going to do to keep it? If you don't do this, you're going to die. It's as simple as that. Yeah. And then it goes on from that. A design for living that really works. That's what's in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, for drunks like me. And if you're an alcoholic, it's in there for you too. Okay? If you're something else, I hope to find out, you'll find out what you got. And you'll go fix it, you know. Some of the guys say, you know, if you got two problems, put $2 in the basket. You know? This is Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't need to hear about that other stuff. No. We know about all of it. We don't need to hear about it. What do we need to hear about? What are you doing to stay sober? That's the message. I didn't understand that, you know. But I remember very early on, and I'd sit in those meetings in those early days, you know, and over and over and over again, those old boys would say, God's doing for me what I can't do for myself. That's the message. And that's what I'm here to try and deliver tonight. God doing for me what I can't do for myself. Yeah, I don't hear that meaning much anymore. Did we forget? I don't know. I hope not. But I want to talk about prayer for just a little bit here. I've just about run out of time already. It gave me the Serenity Prayer. And eventually I got around to learn about all these other prayers. This book is full of prayers and promises, and they're all yours. The very first promise that I found in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, in one of the forewords. It says, Alcoholics Anonymous is successful for two principal reasons. The vast number of recoveries and reunited homes. And you're looking at one. You're looking at one. I see it all the time. Got a whole chapter in here about the family afterwards. And that could take another 6 hours, but I won't get into it tonight. You know? But I got that. Then you gave me that third step prayer. You know, it says, take away my difficulties. By the time I learned the prayer, he already had. Yeah. And then pretty soon I find out what the seventh step says. You know, I learn more and more about these things than the 10-step prayer. I never hear anybody talk about the 10-step prayer. You know, by the time you get to step 10,
The whole program is in step 10, if you read it carefully. The whole program. And has a prayer. Thy will, not mine, be done. One of the greatest reliefs that I got very early on, we had an old gal around, her name was Lola the Lush, from Long Beach. And Lola got up to that podium one night, and she says, if you've done the third step right, whatever's going on in your life is none of your damn business. Whoa, what a relief. I thought all this stuff was my business. No, it's not. It's God's business. All I have to do is show up. And if I follow the directions on page 86 and 87, I get very clear instructions in what's His business and what is my business. My business is just to try and do His business. And one of the great promises that comes with that is in the third step. It says He'll provide what we need if we stay close to Him and perform His work well. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to bear witness, just like that third step says, you know. I bear witness what He's doing for me, you know. This crazy running drunk, and I guarantee you, I was a crazy running drunk, gets an opportunity to work in the most deadly disease known to mankind. What greater honor could there possibly be? Says you have to give it away to keep it. Anybody want some tonight? I want to keep it. Come see me after the meeting. Yeah. I'm supposed to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the message is real clear. I don't carry drunks. I just try and carry the message. God's doing for me what I can't do for myself. God bless you all.